Success means doing the best we can with what we have. Success is the doing, not the getting. In the trying, not the triumph. Success is a personal standard, reaching for the highest that is in us, becoming all that we can be. And this week's opening quote comes from Zig Ziglar. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. Truly, one of the most extraordinary situations we see in the modern world has to be the outlawing and criminalization of cannabis. And it's an interesting tale how cannabis came to be demonized and made an illegal substance. And really, there's no reason for it to remain that way. There really isn't, because this is an incredibly useful plant, and it's about time we called this out for what it is, ladies and gentlemen, because the uses of this plant and the benefit it has for not only mankind and society, but for the world in general, for the environment and every single aspect of our lives, truly is remarkable. And the fact that there are so many uses for this plant and the fact that it has affected the human condition in such a negative way since it became demonized and made illegal would indicate that the outlawing of this plant is in fact one of the most terrible crimes that has ever been committed against the human race. It really is, folks. The banning of cannabis is a crime against humanity, and any politician who supports the continued prohibition of this plant is actively engaging in crimes against humanity. And that is the bottom line. That really is the bottom line, folks. There is no grey area here. The fact is that cannabis needs to have all restrictions lifted from it immediately. And if the politicians refuse to do so, then the people need to prosecute the politicians under human rights abuses and crimes against humanity. I want to discuss a few of the uses of this plant today and how it actually became illegal. Probably not for the entire show, but I certainly want to touch on it here at the beginning of the broadcast, because I think it is an interesting story when one does realize the myriad of uses that this plant actually has, and the story of it being made illegal is quite an interesting one in itself. So I would like to spend a little bit of time on that at the start of the show here. And bear in mind, folks, that this plant is made illegal under drug laws, and yet this plant has been responsible for exactly zero deaths in its entire history of recorded use, which dates back at least 5 to 10,000 years. And to say this plant is healing is really a massive understatement, folks. I've healed all sorts of things with this plant. I've personally treated people with various cancers and seen them all come through with flying colors. I've treated myself for skin cancer, and I've seen it completely healed with one treatment of cannabis oil. I've treated lymphoma and Lyme's disease and autism with amazing results. I've seen Lyme's disease and lymphoma completely cured, and I've seen amazing improvements in autistic children from giving them cannabis oil. The medicinal properties of this plant are literally off the charts, folks. For example, even the seeds. If you eat the seeds, they will dissolve any plaque in your arteries and thereby greatly improve your health in regards to heart disease and this sort of stuff. There are very, very few substances that will dissolve artery plaque, folks, and yet the oil in cannabis seeds will do so. Cannabis or hemp was actually used as the basis for most medicines back before the turn of the last century. And when cannabis was taken out of our medicines and things became more chemically based and pharmaceutically based, then we saw a huge decline in the overall health of this planet. And we saw the emergence of all sorts of exotic diseases as well, such as Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, all sorts of things began to appear that never existed when cannabis was used as the basis for all medicines. And bear in mind also, ladies and gentlemen, that we in fact have an endocannabinoid system in our body. Every organ in our body has receptors that are made to receive cannabinoids into our system. Notably, we do not have a receptor system for any other type of plant in our body. We don't have an endocarotene system in our body. We don't have an endolettuce system or a tomato system or potatoes or any fruit or anything like that. But we do have an endosystem in our body which is designed specifically to accept cannabinoids. And this would indicate that we have had a very, very long symbiotic relationship with this plant and that it is, in fact, our companion plant. And that's something that people seriously need to think about, folks. The fact that you have an endocannabinoid system in your body, and you need to ask yourself why on earth such a system would be there if you were not supposed to be using this plant. Now, medicinally, just in everyday use, as I've just mentioned, the seeds, consuming the seeds, will quite literally dissolve artery plaque and greatly improve your health in that manner. Also, just eaten in salads, the seeds and the leaves will do wonders just to maintain your balance of health. As I also mentioned, I've used the oil to treat skin cancers and various types of cancers with amazing results. The oil can also be applied directly to burns, and it will ease the pain of the burn almost instantly, and it will allow the skin to grow back with virtually no scarring, because the oil has the effect of actually regenerating cells. It actually causes new cell growth and promotes cellular regeneration, which is absolutely amazing that it can do that. And that is the high THC content cannabis oil I'm talking about there, folks. I'm not talking about the type of hemp oil you can go and buy from the health food store. I'm talking about highest THC CBD oil made from high potency indica strains of cannabis. Essentially the type of oil that Rick Simpson is famous for. This is the type of oil that is the most healing of all the oils. People think that THC is just a psychoactive substance, but it's actually very healing as well. In fact, it is THC which has been found to be the most effective cannabinoid in treating cancers. Another amazing aspect of this plant, getting away from the medical side of things for a second, is it has the ability to mineralize. And what I mean by mineralize is that there are certain parts of the plant which have the ability to petrify. And what happens, folks, is you get the substance out of the center of the stalk of the plant, which is called the herd. It's a powdery white substance that's found in the center of the stem. And you mix this with lime and then mix it with water. And in so doing, the lime and the herd bond together and they quite literally petrify, and the plant matter becomes a mineral because it becomes like stone. And it forms a substance which is twice as strong as concrete and six times lighter than concrete. And you'll actually find remnants of this substance in parts of ancient Cairo where they used to build buildings out of this. So that's another amazing part about it, folks. It actually has the ability to petrify with the simple addition of lime and water and form a much more environmentally friendly and much more usable form of concrete and much superior form of concrete to anything we are using today. And of course, folks, this can all be obtained from an annual crop that grows in 3 months and does so with no chemicals and actually improves the soil that it grows in. So we could say goodbye to all of those quarries that are digging for concrete and gravel and all the stuff that we use in building when we could just use lime and hemp herd and find that we have far superior buildings than the ones we are currently constructing. And continuing on with construction for a moment, we can also make far, far superior quality particle board that could be used in floorings and all sorts of stuff in buildings than anything we're making now from using crushed hemp fiber. We could also make superior quality plastics by using the cellulose found within the hemp plant as well. Henry Ford actually made a car back in, I think it was the 1930s or 1940s, made completely from cellulose that he extracted from hemp, sisal and flax, I believe. Though I may be wrong with the last one, it may have been wheat. And he built a car out of this cellulose so you couldn't put a dent in with a 9-pound sledgehammer. So here we have concrete, particle board and plastics simply from this plant straight up. Not to mention superior quality paper that will outlast any other paper. Most paper money was actually made from hemp because it was the only sort of fiber that was robust enough to withstand constant handling that money gets. And when you consider we are pulping endless amounts of old growth forests to make newspaper every day, which we usually burn at the end of the week, it makes perfect sense to be, rather than using trees that take hundreds of years to grow, to actually be getting this material from a 3-month annual crop, which itself produces a far superior quality fiber. We also find that we can make far superior quality clothing. We can make quite soft materials which are far more long wearing than the toughest denim. So we could say goodbye to these pollutive industries such as the cotton industry, which takes a massive amount of chemicals to grow cotton. We could say goodbye to the logging of old-growth forests. We could say goodbye to using petrochemicals to create plastics. We could say goodbye to mining for concrete and mining for gravel to use in building. We could say goodbye to chopping down forests to use in building as well. So you see, by simply decriminalizing hemp and opening it up for use, we could effectively remove the world of some of the most pollutive industries that we are now suffering to rampage across this earth. Some of these industries are destroying our environment to a massive degree, and we could replace them all with an annual crop that grows in 3 months, gives you everything you need for all of these industries, and grows without chemicals, and actually improves the soil that it grows in. So someone please explain to me why we are not doing this. Oh, that's right, it's because they don't want people smoking pot. Well, that's the excuse that they give anyway, but people getting stoned from smoking marijuana is simply the smokescreen to cover up the myriad of uses that this plant has. Because unfortunately, some of these industries that I've just mentioned, which are indeed some of the most pollutive industries on the planet, happen to also be some of the most profitable. And it's extremely important for people to understand that, it really is, that there is absolutely no medical reason for cannabis to be outlawed. In fact, in all studies done, it is shown to have absolutely no detrimental effects on anybody in any manner whatsoever. They even did studies to see whether it would cause long-term effects in regard to study or mental function or anything like that, and they found that it made absolutely no difference at all. As far as health tests, well, there was one series of tests that they did on rodents, and they found that rodents who were given high THC strains of cannabis lived longer and had fewer cancers. In fact, the government conducted 10 tests on cannabis to study its detrimental effects, and every one of the tests proved their claim to be wrong. There were 10 tests they really wished they'd never run. There was one test where they were seeing whether it affected mortality. They found that it didn't have any effect on mortality at all. In other words, nobody can die from this and it doesn't reduce your lifespan either. They did tests to see whether heavy smoking during youth would cause adverse effects later in life, and they found that it didn't. There's also the claim that cannabis is a gateway drug to other drugs, and they found this to be also mistaken. In fact, most cannabis users don't ever want to use other drugs. They simply stay smoking cannabis for most of their lives. There's also the fact that prohibition of cannabis does not work. All it does is drive the price up and thereby provide income for crime gangs to buy weapons and deal other drugs or whatever it is they want to do. They did a great many studies and found that it did have incredible effects in dealing with cancer, but of course they didn't tell anyone. And they also found that it had numerous other medical benefits, but of course, again, they did not tell anyone. And as I said, folks, because cannabis has been responsible for exactly zero deaths in its entire history of recorded use, and I said 5 or 10,000 years, but it is actually, from memory, I think about 12,000 years, and there's actually a rope that was found, which is reported to be 26,000 years old, which was made from hemp as well. So in all of this time, there has never been anyone suffer any detrimental effects from using this plant, and the benefits that this plant holds for mankind are absolutely astronomical, so there should be no doubt in anybody's mind that getting high from this plant is simply the smokescreen that is used to vilify it in the eyes of the public, because were this plant decriminalized, it would put many of the most pollutive and most profitable industries out of business straight away. Of course, there's not a lot of money that goes into the pockets of the politicians if that happens, is there? Of course, the other problem is, again, that people use the plant to get high, and when people get high, they tend to view the world a little differently. In days long past, where smoking of cannabis was first popularized, which was India, it was said to bring moments of great spiritual enlightenment. What we hear from our governments is that people who smoke cannabis end up becoming maladjusted to society, and that is the problem they have with it. And really what happens, folks, is that when people smoke cannabis, they actually wake up to reality and they look around them and they go, oh my God, what am I swimming in? And they simply don't want to participate in this sham anymore. And that, of course, is a huge problem for the government. It's a huge problem for the economic slavery system that our government is running. And I would suggest that what happens when people smoke cannabis, folks, is that they snap out of their trance and they become sane. And that is why they become maladjusted to this society. But as once said by Judy Krishnamurti, it is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. People smoke cannabis and they wake up and see that's what we're living in, and this becomes very detrimental for the powers that believe they be. And that, I believe, is another reason why the plant was vilified and outlawed so profoundly. But it is a very interesting story how the plant became outlawed. It was actually back in 1937 when they first began passing legislation dealing with this plant. And the crusade for the prohibition of cannabis was led by a man named Harry Anslinger. He really was a tireless crusader for its prohibition and managed to almost single-handedly get the plant outlawed. And there's a number of interesting reasons why this was done. Now, Harry Anslinger was the head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in the United States from around about 1930 until around about 1960. And when prohibition ended in 1933, it would have otherwise seen the demise of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. They didn't really have anything to go on from that point. They didn't have anything to really use as their focal point because it wasn't really a drug problem in the United States at the time. But they needed to find something that would explain the falling moral standards of the general population of the United States at the time in the 1930s. And so they found the perfect candidate in marijuana. And they used the term marijuana specifically because it was a Mexican colloquial term. It was actually Mexican slang for hemp or cannabis. And the people who were hearing about this terrible devil weed marijuana and were supporting the outlawing of this plant never knew that they were actually outlawing hemp, which was a widely used product throughout many industries in the United States at the time. But Anslinger lobbied and lobbied to get this plant vilified and to demonize marijuana. He was greatly supported in these attempts and in changing the public opinion of this plant by another man called Randolph Hearst, who ran a large newspaper chain at the time. And Randolph Hearst printed quite literally hundreds of articles in all of his different newspapers vilifying cannabis, claiming that it was responsible for all sorts of violent outbreaks and robberies. And back in those days, virtually everything that went wrong within society was blamed on those who used to smoke marijuana. It also had very racial overtones as well, because Anslinger very often said that marijuana was used mostly by blacks, Hispanics, and entertainers. And so they pushed and pushed, and in 1937, against the wishes of the American hemp industry and also against the medical industry, Anslinger managed to convince the majority of US Congress to outlaw hemp, and so the dark times began from that point, and that also signified the rise of Big Pharma. And this was a global thing, folks, and it still is a global thing. In fact, I believe still to this day you are unable to receive foreign aid from the United States unless you have legislation in place in your country which will see to the eradication of hemp. This was what they did to Bangladesh, incidentally. This is what caused the huge devastation that we saw in Bangladesh back in the 1970s. They signed a trade agreement with the United States and they accepted foreign aid from the United States. But in order to do so, they needed to eradicate hemp from the land. And the term Bangladesh means hemp land people. The only thing that was growing in Bangladesh was basically hemp. That was what was holding the country together. And as soon as they tore all the hemp up, most of the country washed into the ocean, and we saw the huge humanitarian disaster that unfolded in Bangladesh in the 1970s. This was simply due to the United States going in there and eradicating hemp in order to make the country eligible for foreign aid. Of course, when they did that, all they were able to survive on from that point was foreign aid. But what was the real reason that hemp was banned? Because if you really look at the life of Harry Anslinger, you begin to see that there were certain conflicts of interest going on there, not the least of which was, of course, as I said, Anslinger wished to preserve his bureaucratic control over certain sections of the American legal system. And had he not a focal point such as smoking marijuana, then it would have seen the demise of his department at the end of Prohibition in 1933. This would have meant an enormous loss of power for Harry Anslinger, but also, as I said, there were certain conflicts of interest happening, and it also would have spelt bad times for other people. And this can be clearly seen by some of the connections that Harry Anslinger had. Now, about 2 months before hemp was criminalized and outlawed, there was a machine invented which had the potential to revolutionize hemp harvesting. Prior to that point, hemp had been very difficult to harvest because of the very strong fiber. It was very difficult to break up the fiber. But a machine had been invented which would have been to the hemp industry what the cotton gin was to the cotton industry. Before the cotton gin was invented, cotton was a very, very expensive fabric worn by only the richest of people. When the cotton gin was invented, however, it became a very, very cheap fiber that was worn by everybody. But this machine would have revolutionized hemp harvesting. And at the same time, nylon was first coming into being. Nylon was actually promoted by the DuPont Chemical Company as being synthetic hemp. It was marketed also as synthetic cotton and synthetic linen. Anything you wanted, you could get from nylon. And this was about to take over the fabrics industry. And DuPont had put a vast amount of money into developing and marketing nylon. And that business would have absolutely failed. It would have seen probably the end of the DuPont Chemical Company had the hemp industry taken off the way it was poised to do. Now, very notably, the man who lent DuPont all the money for the development of nylon and to finance the industry he was setting up was a man called Andrew Mellon, who owned the Mellon Bank, which was the fifth largest bank in the United States at the time. And Andrew Mellon also happened to be the head of the U.S. Treasury. And as head of the U.S. Treasury, he had placed into position as head of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, Harry Anslinger, the man who campaigned most for the prohibition of hemp. And Harry Anslinger's son also happened to be married to Andrew Mellon's niece. This places Harry Anslinger in the position where his son was just about to marry into a family which was about to experience a major financial loss. So there was a nice little circle of not only interwoven relationships there, but also a family connection between Harry Anslinger and the man who financed the rise of nylon, an industry which would have been completely squashed had the hemp industry been allowed to take off the way it was poised to do with the invention of this new harvesting machine. Now, there are many who speculate that this had a major impact on the prohibition of hemp, and I am one who would speculate that such was the case as well. It really does seem unlikely that Harry Anslinger was not aware of what was going on between his boss, Andrew Mellon, and the companies that Andrew Mellon was investing into, especially since his son was about to marry into the family. But it was Harry Anslinger who saw the production of such films as Reefer Madness, which vilified hemp and created this whole opinion in the public mind that this was this devilish plant which caused people to do very, very evil things. And most of the restrictions surrounding hemp, and indeed most of the drug laws and drug culture and anti-drug culture that we see from government today, comes from these original laws that were put in place by Harry Anslinger. Laws which were all based on fabricated information, fabricated evidence, and some things were pure disinformation. There was one case, the name of the offender escapes me at the moment, but it is a man that Harry Anslinger often used to use as an example. Whenever Congress would question his wanting to continue with the prohibition of hemp, he would bring up this case of a man who had murdered his parents and siblings with an axe while high on marijuana. And this was in fact a true case. A man had indeed murdered his entire family while being high on marijuana, but something that Harry Anslinger always forgot to mention was that the man was also a paranoid psychotic, and that soon after the case he was diagnosed as such and he was sentenced to psychiatric treatment in a mental institution. So much of what was used to construct this whole demon image of marijuana was based on false information, and indeed I and many others believe on a conflict of interests involving Anslinger's connections to Mellon and Mellon's connections to the DuPont Chemical Company. Of course, some 5 years after hemp was outlawed in the United States, it was also promoted again for the war effort. Farmers were told to grow this wonderful, useful plant that we need for the war. We need it for ropes for our men. We need it for parachutes. We need it for rigging. We need it for all sorts of things. And then as soon as the war was finished again, it was classed as the devil weed, marijuana, and a danger to the youth, and something that must be eradicated at all costs. I think it was Harry Anslinger who actually coined the term the assassin of youth, which is what he called hemp in the early days when he was fighting for its prohibition. But the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, as I said, this plant has been responsible for zero deaths in all of its time of recorded use, and even if smoking was the problem, well, they've found how to manufacture THC-free strains now. So we could be growing this plant on large-scale plantations, and we could be replacing all of the industries that I mentioned before. We could even be making biofuel out of this, and if there's any land that is degraded and needs improving, we can actually grow hemp there for a few years and it will improve the soil that it grows in, and that will enable the soil to then be able to recover and to be used for other crops. There are so many uses for this plant, even for non-THC versions, and the fact that we are not even allowed to grow it if it doesn't contain THC should stand as a clear indication to people that THC is the smokescreen. Getting high from smoking pot is just the cover that they use to keep this plant vilified and demonized in the eyes of the general public. There's nothing wrong with this plant, folks. This is actually our companion plant, and we have seen a huge decline in our health and in our environment and in so many aspects of life on this earth since this plant was made illegal. And it's time we stood up and called this out for what it is, ladies and gentlemen, because it is. It's a crime against humanity, especially when so many people are dying from cancers and diseases that are preventable and can be cured. But of course, you're not allowed to say cancer can be cured, are you? Because there were laws passed in 1939, incidentally 2 years after cannabis was made illegal, inasmuch as the Cancer Act of 1939, where it became against the law to tell people that cancer could be cured. And this, of course, is because, like the industries that cannabis could destroy, cancer is also one of the most profitable diseases on the planet. Yes, it truly is a sordid web that we have had woven around us, folks, and we live in a world today where, according to those who control the system, economics holds far superiority over the needs of the people. But I think we're at break time here, folks, so I'll leave it there for now. And we'll go and have a break. Thank you for spending this time with me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. And I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So yes, it's very interesting when you look at the laws surrounding hemp and what the outlawing of this plant has actually done for humanity. And again, when you look at this, folks, the outlawing of this plant has caused harm to humanity. It's caused harm in respect to us being unable to access medicines that we need to maintain our health. It's caused harm in the environmental damage it's caused by resorting to incredibly pollutive practices when we have the availability of a very sustainable annual crop that we could grow, which would supply our needs in regards to many of these industries. So you can see that this does cause harm. So even outlawing this plant, by doing so, the government has in fact breached their own criminal code because they are causing harm to the population. See, it all comes back to this same paradoxical situation that our government sets up with its legal system and how the government contradicts its own legal system virtually all the time. And this is what I mean when I say things like, you know, we need to search out these politicians and have them prosecuted. I mean, I say that sort of thing, and many people listen to it and say, well, it's all very well to say that, but how on earth do we go about it? And that's the question, how do we go about it? And even by me saying that sort of things, I mean, in a way, it's kind of an extremist statement to make, but ultimately, it's what needs to happen. I mean, it's the truth, and that's why I say it. It may seem a little bit black and white and a little bit intense for some people. The same as when I say, look, all these politicians are criminals. I mean, sure, it's a blanket statement, and I probably shouldn't say things like that, but frankly, I get frustrated, and that's why I say things like that sometimes. And ultimately, I mean, I look at it in this respect, folks. I mean, everything that I've said to you today is common sense. Everything that this plant can do is common sense. And when I talk about the fact that we're all enslaved to this private monetary system, this is common sense. When you see the way our governments are controlled by this money system, this is all common sense. And as far as I'm concerned, any politician that is in office who hasn't actually addressed these issues is either bought and paid for or is just too silly to really hold a position of power. Because if I can see this and the common people can see this, if the everyday man on the street can actually see what's going on, and most people can see that there's something terribly wrong, Well, if the politicians are not addressing these issues, well, then there's something terribly wrong with the politicians. And in such a case, I mean, they're either criminals or they're just not supposed to be there, folks. That's the way I see it. I mean, we have to start calling things out for what they are and stop being politically correct in what we say. Now, these issues need addressing. And all the politicians do is they get into office and they talk about all of this rubbish and all of this rhetoric that doesn't mean anything, and they speak in these long sentences that never go anywhere. It's all just neuro-linguistic programming and this manner that they have of speaking, which is designed to actually not say anything. And it kind of numbs people into this almost trance-like state, and they just wander away from a politician's speech wondering what was said, if anything was said at all, thinking that it was all very good. It's a bizarre thing, but that seems to be what happens. So the people on the ground have got to start calling this out for what it is. We really do, folks. We've got to start asking the right questions and asking the politicians to explain why they are doing things like making cannabis illegal when it has all these incredible benefits for mankind, and we are actually causing all this environmental damage. And not only that, but we are limiting our own availability to medicines that we need, and medicines that we had used for centuries, which had always kept us healthy. And we need to point out the fact that there has never been anybody who has suffered any damage from using this plant, and even under the government's own studies, they've proved that all of their claims of this being a dangerous drug are completely and utterly erroneous. So could they please explain to us why this plant is outlawed and why we should not prosecute them if they intend to keep it outlawed? Because we intend to use it, and so they need to remove any legislation surrounding this plant because we're all going to start using it now. I mean, sure, it's a somewhat drastic approach, but if enough people stand up and call it out for what it is, then it will make a difference. And what are they going to do from that point? Now, the problem with us, folks, is that we've forgotten that we actually hold the keys to this little cart that we're driving here if we choose to step into the responsibility of steering it, because we can do it ourselves. We really can. And it is starting to happen. It is starting to happen around the world. We are seeing some really good responses happening. Actually, we had the first symposium of the Full Circle Project yesterday, and it was really wonderful to see the attendance that we had. There was a few little buggy bits that happened. We couldn't get the chat server happening properly, but we found out that was because the attendance was actually so high that it crashed the server. There was actually so many people trying to log on that it crashed the server. And that is actually very encouraging, to have had such a high attendance at the symposium that we crashed the server on the very first meeting. So that was really, really good. So I'd like to put out a great thank you to everybody who did participate in the symposium. If you didn't get there, then it is posted on the Crow House website. I'm not able to upload it to my YouTube channel because my channel is still limited to 15 minutes, but it is in my favorites on my YouTube channel if you check the Crow House YouTube channel. Or you'll find it on the Crow House homepage if you scroll down a bit, and you'll also find it posted in the radio archives. So do check that out and do share it with people. We're going to be having them at least once a month, hopefully every 2 weeks, but it will just depend on how much we are needed to field questions or anything like that, or whether we have any particular news that we need to share. But thank you to those who attended. It was really good to see. And there are a lot of people that are getting the idea of what Full Circle Project is about, and there are a lot of movements starting, a lot of grass fires starting around the planet, so do get involved, folks. And if you're involved in something, if you're involved in some project already, just bring it in. Bring it into the umbrella of Full Circle so you can link it up, use the community connector, and link it up with other projects around the world, and spread your project out around the world as well. That's what it's about, folks. It's about linking everything together with a common focus of not just creating a new way by addressing the symptom that you're addressing, but by actually turning and facing the problem that's created the symptom to begin with. Because every problem that we face on this earth is a result of politicians abusing the office that they hold. And they're able to get away with what they do because of this ridiculous monetary system that they enslave us to, which is a privately run monetary system, which means they have an unlimited supply of money with which to combat anything we want to do. But if we link ourselves up on the ground and start action in our own local community and use a language that people on the ground can understand and point out the paradoxes and the stupidity of this system that we are allowing to enslave us, point out how it breaks its own laws all the time and breaks its own rules all the time, and that everything we are facing is a result of this system and politicians within this system who are behaving in a much too politically correct manner and are very often placing corporate legislation and economic principles over the needs of the people, and we start asking the right questions, we're going to find that we're really going to wake a lot of people up. I've had amazing results already, and so has everybody else who's been involved in the project. And even looking at things such as the outlawing of the hemp plant, this again can be addressed in the same manner. It can be seen as an abuse of office. That's what's caused it. It is actually, as I said earlier, a crime against humanity because it has created so much damage, not just to humanity, but to the environment in which humanity must live. And by outlawing this plant, the government has in fact breached their own criminal codes because they've caused harm to the people, they've caused harm to the environment, they've caused harm to all sorts of things by outlawing this plant. And so we can address it in that way. If we can help people become aware of the uses of this plant and the amount of damage that has been caused by the outlawing of it, then we can make a difference. But again, we need to speak to people in a non-conspiratorial manner and using a language they can understand and by using a legal system that they all believe in and that they all think is real. I mean, even though it's fiction, folks, their belief in its legitimacy is a tool that we can use to turn the system back on itself. But we have to approach things in the right manner in order to do it. This is why I've so often used the issue of Gaza, the recent Gaza video that I put out. If you haven't seen it, I released it to YouTube, a 7-minute video called Save Gaza, Save the World, A Message to Humanity. The thing is with this is, again, it turns the legal system on its head because Gaza is an open war crime and it shows that every politician in the Western world who is supporting this war crime is in fact guilty of breaching their own legislation and breaking their own laws. So again, it's a methodology that you can use to wake people up. I mean, I don't expect to see a situation where we're just going to be able to step up and arrest all the politicians for supporting the war crime that is Gaza Strip. But by pointing out how it is an open breach of what we are supposed to call law, it's a tool that you can use to wake people up. It shows the people that every politician that we have in the world is supporting a war crime. So what makes you think that the legislation they're introducing in your country has any value? And how can it have any value anyway when it's being enacted by someone who's willing to support a war crime of such magnitude as Gaza Strip? But again, to get this through people's heads, they have to get this whole concept of Israeli versus Palestinian or Muslim versus Jew out of their minds, because that's not what's happening there. What's happening is collective punishment of a large group of people who's mainly children. What's happening there is a crime against humanity. The siege of Gaza is a siege against humanity. That is the point. And it's a war crime, and it gives us a tool that we can use to address the global situation. You know, we could use that tool to address all of the little problems and all the little symptoms in our general neighborhoods, because all of the legislation that's created all of these little problems has been created and enacted by the same people who are supporting the war crime that is Gaza Strip. So this is what I'm saying with that. This gives us a tool that we could actually use globally to rein the whole system back in one fell swoop, if people were willing to step into their power enough to stand up and call that out for what it is. You know, most people aren't ready to do that. They're not willing to do that. They have some preconceived notion about their belief over who is the victim in this case. They can't rise above the concept of Palestinian versus Israeli or Muslim versus Jew. They can't really see it as humanitarian. And so they need something more tangible on the ground in their own community that they can get involved in. So, okay, use the community connector, find out what it is in your local community that is an issue for people, and then help them readjust their focus as to what has created that issue to begin with. Because there's no good putting a band-aid on the symptom. There's no good trying to repair this little problem that's been created unless you're going to address that which created the problem to begin with, which is the legislation that was put in place by some politician somewhere who abused the office that he holds and usually gave power to a corporation over the people, or subjugated the needs of the people to the economic system or whatever. Something that he's done which has put people in a state of hardship and has caused harm to the populace by his act of writing words on a piece of paper. If these words have created a situation that has put people in harm, then this politician is in breach of the government's own criminal code. So again, it all comes back to perspective. And I'm not saying that you're going to find any legal success through this, but it's a mechanism that you can use to show people how corrupt and how convoluted this system is, And I've used this approach, and I've seen a little spark of enlightenment go off in people's minds. And then they're willing to look at other things. And then they usually go down the rabbit hole and they find out that there is actually quite a large conspiracy at work here. And there is, in fact, a very, very clever controlling hand that is controlling most aspects of what is going on this earth. But you can lead them to a point where they can discover that themselves by taking a non-conspiratorial approach from the beginning, speaking to them in a language they can understand, and simply pointing out the paradoxes of this legal system and how the politicians, who are actually public servants that we employ into positions of management for us, are actually causing harm to the people via the legislation they're enacting, and in doing so, they are actually in breach of their own criminal code. You can point this paradox out to people. This causes this little awakening to happen, folks, and then they go down the rabbit hole for themselves and they find out what's really going on. And as I said, I've had an amazing amount of success using this approach, and so have many people that I know. And when we start bringing all of our community projects together and all of our knowledge base together under the umbrella of the Full Circle Project, and we start linking up and sharing ideas and sharing our little community actions that we're doing with everybody, and we start seeing these little grass fires ignite all around the world, and we start seeing people turn and face the problem that created all the symptoms to begin with, then we're going to see some real change. And once this starts, it'll just take off like a wildfire. In fact, it's already beginning to do so. So please do go and sign up to the Full Circle Project. The website is fullcircleproject.net, and just get involved. This is a movement without leaders. It's a mechanism. It's a tool that everybody can use. All it needs is audience participation. And it's that time. It's that time now, folks. It's time to act. Now, we've been here online discussing all this stuff and disseminating information, and everybody knows now. Everybody knows that the system's corrupt, and they know that something's terribly wrong, and we've got to do something about it. So what we're providing here is a mechanism with which people can do just that. And I've suffered a little bit of criticism lately for suggesting that people put their rabbit holes down for a while. People have said, oh, Max is saying we shouldn't look into things. And this is not what I'm saying at all, folks. It's not what I'm suggesting at all. What I'm saying is that after 40 years of research into all of this sort of stuff, I can prove that it's anybody you want. I mean, I can prove it is everybody that you think. But we constantly argue about this stuff. We constantly point the finger. We want to know who to point the finger to so we can just send them hate mail or something. I don't know where we're expecting to go with this, but we've done this for years and it's not getting anywhere. And we can argue all we like about who the controlling hand is, but until we rein this system back under control, it's just going to continue to get worse while we're continually arguing about which is the more important topic. Now, what the important topic here is freedom. I really believe that is the important topic, because all of the problems that we face are because we don't have freedom. All the mysteries that we're trying to solve are because we don't have freedom. All of the conspiracies that are there, all of the controlling mechanisms that are in place exist because we do not have freedom. So we've got to establish freedom. We've got to establish the freedom to find out what's really going on. We know it's all run by the money system. We know that's the glue that holds it all together, regardless of who or what controls that. We'll find that out later. But until we're prepared to address things on the ground, we're not going to get there. We're never going to find out anything if we just continue to argue with each other over what our perspective of our particular rabbit hole is. And folks, I've been down just about all the rabbit holes, and all of them have validity, and you can get stuck down any one of them and think that this is the end of the story, but it's not. There are many, many stories, and there are many, many mechanisms at work here to keep us under control, but the most effective one of all is the divide and conquer strategy. And that's what all of these rabbit holes do. And if we could just put them all down for the moment and link up and start getting away from our computers and get out there on the ground and start lighting grass fires in our community, grass fires of knowledge in our community, grass fires of empowerment, and grass fires that help shift the perspective of the people and help the people realize that they do actually have power. We have the power to change everything if we just choose to get involved. Then we can make a difference. Then we'll find out what's really going on. Once we've established some freedom, we can go back to our rabbit holes and we can be free to enjoy them and explore them for as long as we want, because we will not have this impending threat that is manifesting itself around us. You know, we can do this in a way that will empower people, and it will empower the youth. And it's very important that we do empower the youth. It's so important that the young people start getting involved in this, because they're waiting for people my age to die out. People like Zen Gardner and myself, Ken O'Keefe, many of my brothers out here, you know, we're starting to get on a little bit. I mean, Ken's still young, relatively. I hope he doesn't hold that against me. But we are starting to get on a bit, and we need the young folks to start picking up the banner and moving this forward. So we need to provide a mechanism that's going to empower these young kids and empower people in their community with the idea that they can make a difference. And we're not going to do this by arguing amongst ourselves and dragging people down our particular rabbit hole. We've got to turn and address the problem that has created the rabbit hole to begin with. That's really the issue here, folks. The issue is freedom and a lack of it. And we're at a crossroads here. We really are. We're at a crossroads. We're at a time when we can actually have freedom if we choose to get involved. There are so many people who are calling for total anarchy, which of course is total self-governance. Don't get me wrong with the word anarchy. Many people don't understand what that word means, but it actually means self-governance. But there are many people who are saying we need to collapse the system and step straight into a condition of self-governance straight away. But they don't understand it would be very dangerous to do that, because many people are simply not ready for it. They're not ready for that responsibility of self-governance. What we need to do is find a mechanism where we can lead them back to a point of self-governance. And the mechanism, I believe, is to point out the flaws within this system that exists right now. Because if we are not capable of stepping into our power and leading ourselves out of this mess that has been created around us, then how are we ever going to be capable of being able to live in a state of true self-governance, a state of true anarchy, where every man stood for himself and every man had a moral principle that he upheld? How are we ever going to get to that position if we're not prepared now to simply stand up and call this system out and take the necessary steps to free ourselves from this system? And we can do it in an intelligent way. We can do it in a way that doesn't require violence. We can do it in a way which simply calls out the common good in everybody. Because what is manifesting around us affects everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're a policeman, doesn't matter whether you're a politician, doesn't matter where you sit in the food chain. If you're not one of the banking cartels that run this system, then eventually you're going to be discarded, and it's not too far down the track. So there's no reason for anybody to not want to be involved in this, because this is a project for all of mankind. It's a project that's not identifying enemies and wishing to attack them. It's simply identifying the problems and identifying the solutions and implementing them. That's what it's all about, folks. So it doesn't matter who you are. You know, you've got a uniform on, perhaps you're working in some government office, you have some particular role. Well, step outside of that role for a moment, step back into your humanity and have a look at the project and have a look at what's being created around you. Because we don't want any violence, we don't want to overthrow anybody, we don't want to point the finger at anybody, we just want to shift the direction that we're going. You know, it's time for humanity to stand up and take control of this steering wheel, ladies and gentlemen, it really is. We've been driven towards a place that we don't want to go. We're heading for a cliff, and we're doing so very, very fast. And we have the ability to change it. We have the ability to step into our role and to step into steering this cart anytime we want. And now's the time for us to do it. You know, and I think people are going to break ranks. I really do. I think that many people within the system now are seeing things for what they are. And many people are going to break ranks. It's nice to see Putin's calling the West out for what it is. But again, I don't trust him. I mean, he's in there bombing Syria now. It doesn't help dropping bombs on everyone. He should call things out a little bit more than what he's doing. So he is a player, but at least he is calling things out. Same as Jeremy Corbyn in England. At least he's calling things out. I don't trust his policies. He's a politician, but at least he's offering some debate and raising issues that need to be talked about. And it's nice to see someone in mainstream politics doing that, regardless of what other flaws he may have. At least these questions are now being raised, and that's a good thing. I think people are realizing that mankind's had enough. Of course, I mean, he's a politician. He's doing it for a political play. Maybe he's taking a gamble that there are more people who have a conspiratorial overview of the world and who can see that there are actually real problems that need addressing than there are sleeping sheep all these days, and maybe he'll be able to garner that niche of the voting public in order to propel him to higher office. Who knows what his motivations are, but at least he is raising a few issues that do need to be raised. Not that I trust him, because I don't trust any politician yet. Perhaps one will rise to the forefront one day, but I haven't quite seen one yet. But again, it is nice to see these issues at least being raised. Personally, I don't think we're going to find any solution in voting at the moment, but of course it is the only mechanism we're allowed to have, which is a bit of an issue. But at least, I mean, if there's someone like Jeremy Corbyn in there and you're given a choice between Jeremy Corbyn and David Cameron, well, who would you vote for, folks? I mean, not that I vote at all, but if I was someone who was on the electoral roll and I was required to, well, I certainly wouldn't be giving it to David Cameron. Not only because of his personality and his warmongering, I don't know, call me finicky, but I just have a problem with anyone who gets up to the type of extracurricular activities that David Cameron seems to enjoy performing with the heads of dead pigs. Makes you wonder, folks, doesn't it? I mean, this is the man who's calling for bombing Syria and all of the stuff he's doing and saying all these people in the world are doing all these evil things. And look at the mindset of this man. Look what he gets up to in order to join an elitist club of his college mates. Unbelievable. But I guess that is just the nature of Western politics, folks. But look, we're getting pretty close to the end of the show here. Now, this is going to be my second last show for this particular season of Surviving the Matrix. I'm going to come on, I'm going to do a show next week, and that will be the last show that I do until further notice. I honestly don't know when I'm going to be coming back on the air at this stage. I've got a lot of things I want to do. I'm going to the jungle in Peru, and I'm going to be staying there. I intend to spend some time working on a couple of films and also concentrating on the Full Circle project. So I really don't know when I'm going to be back on air, or even indeed if I'm going to be back on air. I'd say I am. I mean, I'd say I'm not going to be away for too long. There's too much going on in the world, and I don't suppose I'm going to be able to keep my mouth shut for too long. So I wouldn't expect that I'll be gone for good, but I just have to take some time off at the moment, and I really cannot give a date when I will be returning. There is a wealth of information on thecrowhouse.com that you can go and get to. There's nearly 8 years of back shows there. There's a lot of information there that you can share. There's a lot of back shows that you could play. I'm sure there's a lot of information that still applies to the current times we live in. Many of the earlier shows I did them in a manner so that they wouldn't be dated. You could go and pretty well play them, and they would apply to any time we live in, unless they're topical about political events that happen to be occurring at the time. They're usually shows that will remain, hopefully, reasonably timeless. So I can offer that to you in the meantime while I'm off air. But things have been getting quite difficult, folks. It's been very hard to maintain. My income has been almost non-existent, and my savings are extremely low. So I'm not really in a position where I can stay living in the first world and still be able to maintain and continue to do what I do. So I need to go to a place where I can just afford to live a little bit better and have a little bit of support around me. And I can do that in the jungle in Peru. I have some wonderful friends there, and there's certainly an influx of people that come through where I'm staying as well. So I'm able to put energy into helping people in that way. But as I said, folks, I'm not going to be off air for good. You won't be able to shut me up for too long. There's just too much going on in the world. I mean, who knows? You may hear from me every week or two, even though I say I'm not going to be doing radio shows. You may find that I pop my head up and say a few words anyway. But thank you to everybody who has sent me so many kind emails over the years and who has shown so much support for the show. Thank you to anybody who's ever made a contribution to the website. I really could do with some folks. They are very, very few and far between these days. I know times are hard, but that is a lot of the reason why I have to discontinue as well. I simply can't afford to keep going at this rate. But again, thank you to all the loyal listeners, and thank you to all the kind emails that everybody has sent me over the years, and thank you to all the support that everybody has shown me. But look, that is it for me now, folks. I'm completely out of time. I will be back to speak to you next week, and I will look forward to doing so. It's been a pleasure spending this time with you today. Please do take good care until our paths cross again next week, and I'll look forward to speaking to you then. In La Cache.